Hey, this is Church is Lame. I'm Scott.
I'm Mark.
And every week we bring together the lamest of lame headlines that make the church look lame.
That was a lot of lame. I feel like my legs don't work anymore. It's just from hearing the word so much.
Well, I feel like after we get through tonight's conversation, you will agree with me that there was plenty of lame to go around.
Okay. Well, hit me with it.
Okay. Let's start. Let's ease into this one. Okay.
Okay.
Around about a year ago this time, you might remember us mentioning a story about about Christian organizations taking out ads in the Super Bowl. And this year is no different. Once again, we are going to see an ad campaign that's called He Gets Us.
Well, it's good to know that He still gets us.
Your buddy
maybe
Jesus.
That's what they should have called it. Like, you know, I still know what you did last summer.
That's perfect. That would be, I would pay to see that ad.
Yeah, it'd be perfect.
I still know what Jesus did last summer. does Jesus really need an ad campaign? Is that really where we're at?
Yeah, I'm going to go with, we didn't need the first one, so we doubly don't need this one.
Yeah.
And like, again, how much money does it cost to get a commercial into the Super Bowl? And, you know, who can you feed with that money instead?
So many things, millions and millions and millions. We should, hold on. Let's, you know, this is what we should have done before the show. Let's see. How much does a 30-second Super Bowl commercial cost in 2024? Take a guess.
I'm going to go with $15 million.
Let's see here. So you overshot that, I think. Probably like at the very beginning of the Super Bowl, that probably is a accurate number. But the average cost for a 30-second spot is around $7 million.
Okay. So, I mean, I doubled it. So you did. It's good to know that's not completely stupid. I mean, $7 million is totally reasonable for 30 seconds of airtime one day.
For 30 seconds. And if I'm not mistaken, let me just so here's what they're going to do. They're going to do during the 60 second spot in the first quarter. So that's $15 million. You just right, followed by a 15 second spot in the second half, which I'm sure, you know, brings considerably less money. So maybe like $2 or $3 million. So $20 million just to say, Jesus gets you.
Yeah, it was like all the money is given by people who just can't be troubled to give it to poor people and to help them.
Yeah.
But just throwing advertisements at people that, you know, are, well, at that point, probably drunk enough not to care.
Yeah.
You know, like that makes sense.
Yeah. Like to me, it's interesting. Whoever the organization is behind the He Gets a campaign, right?
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, in your day-to-day life, you go around thinking that poor people deserve it because they're lazy and where, you know, they, you know, you make your bed so you lie in it. So if they're homeless, that's what they deserve. And I refuse to give them 10 bucks towards a McDonald's meal, but I will hit up every rich person I know to put together millions of dollars for a 60 second ad spot during the Super Bowl. Like, how do you call that biblical values? How do you like, say that and then not throw up a little bit, you know?
It's like there's this evangelistic instinct that a lot of, you know, evangelicals have, you know, weird how that works, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how the money, I mean, I'm going to go with the idea that they maybe got a discount on the airtime just because it's, you know, a religious thing.
Maybe, yeah.
But even then, even if I give like a generous discount, it's like you could have trained how many evangelists with that money. It's like, so it's not like, to me, my brain is saying that it's not even like a good evangelistic move.
Yeah.
And it's like it feels more like vanity.
Yeah. And one of the things you and I talk about a lot on the show is opportunity cost and just how bad church leaders are at thinking about opportunity cost.
Yeah.
And for anybody who's not not familiar with the phrase, all it is a fancy way of saying that you only have one pile of money. And if you do one thing with that pile of money, then you can't do another. right? And so what mm-hmm. churches typically do is they look at the cool thing they want to do and they just say, well, we're doing it in the name of Jesus. So that automatically makes it cool, right? And they don't necessarily think about opportunity cost. And if we do this, we can't do that. And maybe there's a third option or a fourth option that we really should just kind of put the money aside for and not even use it right now. And so my experience has been church leaders are very, very bad when it comes to opportunity cost.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a kind of this impulse of like, when we want to do something and we're really earnest about it, we want to do it for, you know, for the kingdom, right?
Yeah.
You know, using good old Christian language, like we want that effort to be baptized. We want it to be a holy thing, right? And yeah. So it's not like it's a bad thing in and of itself to do.
Right.
But it's just also to say, like, maybe like what you said is like they're just not thinking through. It's like,
yeah.
And I get it. It's to me, it's just kind of like a misbegotten execution of some of Christian's best impulses.
Right. And then so the last thing I'm gonna say about this, because then mm-hmm. I'm done, is the idea, like where I first started, like, does Jesus really need better marketing? Mark, can you tell me for the grand prize here? Can you tell me year after year what the best-selling book in the world is?
Grapes of Wrath.
No.
Oh, okay, then it's the Bible.
It's the Bible, right? Mm-hmm. There is no book that sells better year over year over year over year over blessed year than our holy book, the Bible. I really don't think that you can argue with numbers like that when it comes to branded marketing. You know, there is no lack of understanding of where should I go if I want to learn more about Jesus and how he feels about me. I don't think anybody wonders where they should go to find that information, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, like the carrying call that, you know, you'll get number of times on our show, right? Is that, if we as the church are doing a better job, we don't need multi-million-dollar ad campaigns because we're doing the work.
Ding, 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 ding. Give that man a prize. Exactly.
Yay.
What do Yay. I
get? Yeah. Herpes.
Oh, man. All right, moving right along.
I mean, snakes, sir. They're called herpetologists. Go. Come on, get with it.
All right. Story number two.
Right.
I'm never in the spirit of beating a man when he's down or a church when they're down. But I think it's important to take note of the fact that one of the largest mega church corporations, syndicates, mobs, pseudo gang outfits in the country, which is Willow Creek, has announced that they're shutting down their Chicago campus. And the quote I found incredibly interesting in their rationale was, we had pledges to fund almost the entirety of the purchase with a plan to carry a responsible level of debt. So a little bit of inside baseball for you all. Every church in America once a year has some sort of sermon or some sort of activity that's called, in some way, shape, or form, your finances and the Bible and what the Bible has to say about it. And what it is a thinly veiled attempt to get you to give more money. No big deal, right? That's how churches function. They provide a service.
Telethon.
They provide a service. You provide some money. That's the way it's always worked, right? But the other thing that goes along with this is a yearly, hey, there's this person you should really know about, Dave Ramsey, who is a personal hero of ours, who espouses the Christian principle of having no debt, that debt is dumb.
Yeah.
And so it's very interesting to see a it's not even a mega church, it's a giga church. It's so large with so many campuses. So fundamentally lose the plot, you know, and just say, well, we have interesting ideas and we want to go interesting places. And most of all, we just want to be big.
Mm-hmm.
That we're just going to start, you know, we're just going to put good money after bad money after more money after more money and make a kingdom investment into something that we can't sustain through our own giving, so that we'll go into debt to make it happen. Create this important community resource and then totally watch it implode. Just unbelievably bad stewardship. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and like this is Willow Creek. So, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how sad am I to watch one of their branches close? You know, I'm at like a 1, right? Because right. I have like at least like the whole like oh, let me ask you this question. How is Jesus not like a McDonald's?
Right.
And then how is Willow Creek like McDonald's?
Right.
So, I mean, that's my problem. So if you like Willow Creek out there, just don't listen to me. But, you know, there are churches out there that are dying and like they're shrinking, but they have a lot of money on hand.
Yeah.
And the church is going to just poof out of existence when the last member expires.
Yeah.
And like, that's not a good use of resources. And like churches like that could just fold into a younger, healthier church.
Yeah.
And, you know, and put those, you know, those resources to work. So like this, at least to me, looks like Willow Creek making a reasonably intelligent decision to go, okay, this, you know, this investment in the kingdom, it didn't pan out. We cannot figure out how to make it work. It opened in what, like 2018 from the article. And so like what happened just a little bit later than that, right? You know, we had COVID, so maybe that, you know, kneecapped it. So I can at least look at the bright side of that, say like, well, you're not dragging this out. You're not just throwing more money away.
Yeah.
But it is a shame, like you said, it's like you created a community resource and now, you know, it Kaiser Soze is out of there.
Yeah. All right. Like I said, I don't want to beat them too much while they're down. So let's go ahead and move on. But I think it was all worth mentioning. I think the big story of the week, and certainly if you measure bigness by the amount of headlines you see about it, is the story about Alistair Begg. If that name's not familiar to you, Alistair is everywhere. TV, radio, internet, DVD. Like, you know, I don't know that I'd put him in the same category of prosperity gospel kind of thing, but definitely, like, he's been around for a long, long time, certainly long enough that his name has traction.
Yeah, he's definitely, like, beloved in, like, the Moody crowd, you know. And so, like, it's a, you know, if you're not familiar, Moody Bible Institute, you know, founded by Dwight Moody. It's a, you know, I would call it a fundamentalist, but it's like a soft fundamentalist school.
Sure. And they have to cast a wide net. And so Alistair, I believe, you know, he's got radio shows, he's got podcasts, mm-hmm. all the rage and stuff. So he was asked a question about, I've got a family member who is getting married to a transgender person.
Yeah.
Should I go? And Alistair's answer was perfectly compassionate, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. He was just like, yeah, for the sake of the relationship, go. You don't have to approve of the lifestyle. You don't have to bless the wedding or any of that stuff, but you can still show up and say, I love you and I wish you the best without compromising your spiritual values or your faith. And you can accomplish both at one time and not feel torn or feel like you're betraying either your family or your faith in the process. And the blowback has been ginormous.
Yeah, I mean, for people that affirm traditional marriage, as Alistair Begg does,
and he's not gray about it. He affirms traditional marriage.
Yeah, you know, it's like this was a remarkably nuanced way for that for a person in that position to look at it.
I was
frankly impressed, because how many headlines do we see of, you know, like Franklin Graham spouting off some sort of nonsense, right? Where it's like, no, he sat down, he thought about this, and like he said something. And then, of course, you know, the headline, you know, should Christians cancel him? It's like, why? Because he wasn't like, you know, burn them at the stake and shoot them in the face,
right? Yeah, it was, I don't know what to say about the times that we live in. Like, I'm not that guy. I'm not like Mr. Well, in the good old days, we all used to get along, because we didn't, right? The good old days weren't that good. Like, there were recessions and there were divisions. So I'm not that guy who thinks about the good old days. But I have a hard time accepting that we are at the place where I want to be, that I am so invested in my my worldview. And the reason I say worldview is because this is not just about being a Christian. This is about being a conservative, Republican, Christian kind of thing, right? It's all kind of intertwined. And so it's about making sure that I create a clear distinction between what I am and what I believe, and they believe, whoever they are, they, us, other, them, you know, making sure that I make sure that they know that I don't approve. Like, when did we get to this place where my approval is what matters to anybody? That I should make it the line of demarcation between me and the people I love, you know? It's such a bizarre place to be, and do it in the name of Jesus, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not sure if there's anybody who like makes a decision like this to like maybe not attend that wedding and who likes that decision, that they had to make the decision. Yeah. I'm sure there's plenty of people that feel confident that they made the right decision.
Sure.
And like it's such a typical thing to see, like, this black and white thinking, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like I have to completely and utterly not be near anything that doesn't, you know, comport with my beliefs. And it's like, well, welcome to Earth.
Yeah, welcome to the real world.
So it's like we have hard decisions to make, and it makes me very mad to like that. Like the typical response to this, right, is, oh no, just you can't go to that. That's evil and wicked. And just for you to put your butt in a seat is for you to basically kiss Satan on the buttocks. You know, it's like, no, it's not. You know, you can be there. The fact that you're there and that person knows that you don't really approve, but you're there for them because you love them. I think like that's going to say so much more than, you know, cutting yourself off from that person ever could. It's the moment you know you can't have a relationship with somebody without it being toxic to you and or them. Like that's when you have to step away.
Yeah, and the other side of that is the person getting married, they know you don't approve and they invited you anyway. And they didn't invite you so to have a debate or a fight. They invited you because they love you. You know, so the highest law is love God. The next highest law is love one another. Like, so if you're concerned about keeping the law, you go to the darn wedding and you show some darn love, even if it hurts a little, you know, especially if it hurts a little.
Yeah. And I think like when we talk about those commandments to love God and to love your neighbor, I think a lot of people don't really understand what those really mean, like where they're coming from.
Yeah.
You know, cause like those, I mean, ultimately, if you look at the 10 commandments, you can see where like, you know, part of it is, you know, how to love God, and part of it's how to love your neighbor.
Yeah.
And like something like going to your like nephew's, I'm not sure what label to put on this wedding, but, you know.
Yeah, I would just call it LGBTQ, whatever.
LGBTQ wedding. You know, it's like that doesn't fall neatly into one of those categories. And so we have to make hard decisions. And you know, I'm happy that this person reached out to somebody who they thought could give them that decision. But so many people, like, they're just going to like, you know, go to the easiest answer that they can find and go with it.
Yeah.
And you know, Alistair Begg didn't give an easy answer.
Yep.
I think he gave a good one at least.
Absolutely. The last thing I want to say about this, and then I'm off. So it's not Alistair Begg that we think is lame. It's the Christian culture that's now trying to cancel him, right? And it turns out, after all, Christians are okay with cancel culture, you know, as long as they're not the ones being canceled. You know, at what point in Christian history has there ever been consensus about anything, that we can't have a little bit of I don't want to keep using the word compassion over and over again, but we can't accommodate one another in our differences, so long as we all agree together that Christ is Lord, you know, and that it is his sacrifice on the cross that keeps us in relationship. and provides us with life eternal. Like, where have we gotten to that's not enough for us to be a community anymore, that we will find any razor thin reason we can find to divide from one another, you know? And that's the real shame of this story and what we find incredibly lame about it, I think.
Oh yeah, I would completely agree with that. And, you know, just because, you know, we have scriptural references, you know, Paul talks about like, let there be no divisions among you. But I mean, you look at the modern church, you know, it's not like we used to have just one church, right? Then it became two churches, you know, Catholic and Orthodox. And then we got the Protestants, and then that subdivided into Lutherans and Calvinists and Anabaptists. And it just got weirder and weirder. And I would love it if we could just have one church where there was this, you know, plurality of ideas that, you know, we can sit there and we can look at Jesus as Lord and everything else, you know, like we get our priorities straight.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We are churches lame. You may have watched or listened to this episode and thought to yourselves, man, Mark and Scott really have zero respect for the church. And we just want you to know that nothing could be further from the truth. We love Jesus. We love the church. We want to see the church increase in its reputation, in its effectiveness in ministering to the world. But there is no doubt that lameness in the headlines and lameness in the way we think and lameness in the way we act affects the way the world writ large sees us. And so what we try to do is catalog all these examples so that when church leaders ask the questions, how come nobody takes the church seriously? Here's your answer. You're welcome. So by all means, if you want to be part of the conversation on YouTube, you know, drop us a comment or a like and subscribe. Or on a podcast, you can rate us and review us. Or shoot us an email, churcheslamepodcast@gmail.com.
And with that, go in peace and serve the Lord. Amen.